Good morning and welcome to Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan and we have Waleed Shihabi with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Waleed. We missed you last week.
Yep, I went on a little vacation actually. Nice. And had trouble coming back. You might have heard of the floods.
Yes. So
yes. It was a little bit hard. I was supposed to be back by this time last week, but got a little bit delayed.
Yeah, and were you stuck in the airport or did you decide to just extend your hotel stays and your vacations?
So extended and then timed it completely wrong, flew in on Tuesday night, ended up diverted to Abu Dhabi, what was supposed to be an overall like a 5-hour trip end to end, ended up being 20 hours, and just trying to get back home was a bit of an adventure.
Won't complain.
Good vacation. No, I didn't ruin the vacation. Made it an interesting return.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. And how was Sri Lanka?
Awesome. Yeah. I love that country. It's close. It's green. The infrastructure is good.
People are so lovely. They're
lovely.
They?
Absolutely lovely. Yeah. The tourism infrastructure is a lot to see. The beaches are lovely. My son picked up surfing and is now obsessed with it. So yeah.
Oh, that's so nice.
A lot of good memories to come back with a lovely vacation for sure.
I'm really happy for you, but also very, very jealous. I'm going to be totally honest.
I'm sure
honest.
You'll get a chance soon. I've been putting off this vacation for quite some time.
Yes. And, I can only pray. That I'll have a vacation soon. But no, it's great. I have been to Sri Lanka before, actually. It's really, really worth going. Did you see the elephant sanctuary?
We did a safari. We rode next to a herd of elephants, actually, coming through. We saw a lot of animals over there. Very well kept, very well taken care of.
Cool.
Absolutely. It's my third time, actually, to Sri Lanka.
Your third time? Okay.
Yes.
So it's, I met someone who was here in town for Token 2049, and she lives she lives in London, and her startup is based in Paris. Apparently, Paris has a very good programs for startups.
So we've
apparently.
Heard. Yes.
So anyway, but she said she loves Dubai so much because of its strategic location, and she can travel easily to so many different places that she is considering moving from London to Dubai just for that reason, so she can kind of travel more. And
I'm a big fan of what's in proximity of Dubai, and been discovering what lies around the 5-hour flight radius, and there's some awesome stuff. I've been to Ethiopia, which is within that category. There's Sri Lanka definitely ranks very highly.
You need to be a travel expert
on
the show.
maybe next. Yes.
Funny that, because she also said. She said about Dubai, what she really loves about it is that you can be politically incorrect here all the time.
And it's
she said it's so refreshing to say that, I like Putin. It's funny, it's refreshing to say I'm pro-Russian, or to say, I don't like the way that the West is moving and in what direction it's moving.
And it's very interesting where the window of opinion and the window to have differences of opinion seems to be more acceptable here than where you'd expect it to be. So
exactly.
She's not far off the truth.
She said democracy was created to eventually destroy itself because peace makes weak men. That's what she said.
Oh wow, she's got strong opinions.
She does. We need to get her on the show, back on the show. Someone else who has very strong opinions is Pavel Durov. So he's usually very mysterious and just nowhere to be seen. But he was on stage at Token 2049 last week, and he said Telegram's next move is it's going to tokenize its stickers. What do you think of that?
I mean, all power to them. I'm not the biggest expert on that
stickers.
Whole tokenization NFT space, but I think it sort of aligns very well with the decentralized approach that people like Durov adopt.
Yeah.
It's creating value that's outside the existing status quo and infrastructure through tokenization and other sort of blockchain. blockchain-related instruments like that. I think he's always been, to some degree, a champion of the the crypto and decentralized finance space.
Yeah.
And good as good a candidate as any, I would say, to sort of spearhead something new in that direction. Mm-hmm.
He also did an interview with Tucker Carlson, and he said some very interesting things. He said the only city in the world where he was attacked was San Francisco. And he was kind of, I didn't actually watch the entire interview. I'm going to finish it today. But he was, you know, going back to that point about democracy in the West, he was just saying, you know, that's why he didn't want to, he wanted initially not to come to Dubai, but to go to the US from Russia. And he went, he had a bad experience, same thing in Europe. And then that's why he came to the UAE. So it was great. And I don't know why he doesn't speak on stage more, because he's such a good, such a good speaker, really. He really has a lot of presence on stage. I wasn't there, but I saw videos, and just from the videos, you know, cracking jokes on stage, very confident.
I guess some people develop a sort of comfort in public speaking and being public over time. Maybe my guess would be that his experience back in Russia previously sort of made him shy of generally being outspoken. Mm-hmm. That would be my take. I have no background information on the on the topic, but I think also as Telegram starts talking about going public and mm-hmm. and so on, it just comes with the territory that mm-hmm. you need to increase your profile and you need to make people more interested in your opinions and what's happening within Telegram in order to increase and ramp up that demand for the for the company and for the stock.
Yeah, and not just post shirtless photos. Yeah.
Well, that's a start. It's a conversation starter for sure.
It's definitely a conversation starter. Right, moving on to, I mean, not that, you know, a lot of women are not complaining about that. However, we would also like to see more of his personality. UAE's telecom giant, Du, has launched a new fintech arm, DuPay. Very interesting. Range of digital financial and payment services, international money transfers, peer-to-peer transactions, mobile phone recharges, and bill payments. It will also allow users, including household workers, to receive payments and salaries directly through the app. It also supports several languages, English, Hindi, Bengali, languages to ensure inclusivity, it said. And it also plans to add a card feature to broaden its payment options. So it got a license from the Central Bank of the UAE to offer those services in March.
Not uncommon, by the way, telecom companies getting into the payment space, getting into the finance space, much more so. A lot of telecom companies fashion themselves as technology companies these days, have been transitioning into that. And they have excellent infrastructure to make that happen,
exactly.
Right? They have millions of customers already connected to them, probably on digital interfaces,
and
on
all of our
apps.
Data,
and the data is all there, the payments, you know, you pay your bill on a monthly basis, so the payment system, that payments infrastructure they have is very strong. A lot of them used to actually use their own billing network to charge for other services by other companies. So, you know, that's how you get into the space. You build that infrastructure and then other people use it, and then you start making money off of other people using that that infrastructure. So it's not very uncommon. And the reverse is also true. So a lot of big players in the sort of the technology-enabled finance industry have actually gone into more into the communication space and the telecom space. So I think we're going to see more and more of that going forward.
I mean, I love it because, you know, instead of using Apple Pay, why not use DuPay or Etisalat Pay? It would,
I mean, it depends on how the feature would work and what the utility of it is. You can be using multiple different payment methods for multiple different things, something for subscription, something for point of sale, and so on. But I guess the leverage that Du has is that super understanding of their customer base and their spending habits, and you know, direct connectivity to their bank accounts and so on. So I think a lot of salary related financing solutions also probably could become part of that.
Yeah, very interesting. It's I think we can talk about this for a very long time. The rise in fintech, and I mean everything from Tabby to Keeper as well. By the way, how is Keeper doing?
Excellent. So I wouldn't have been able to take a vacation had we not sort of wrapped up a very important milestone for the company. I'm not going to announce it here, but you know, expect something from us soon in the next couple of weeks to talk about a major milestone for us.
And why would you not talk about it here, Walid? Sorry.
You're going to get me in trouble with my co-founder. I think we just need to dot some I's and cross some T's actually before we make the announcement. But it's really good news. We've been working, you know, very hard for the last 6 months pretty much to secure a degree of funding for a core service that we have launched and that's gotten a lot of traction.
So
we have good news on that, front. It's effectively the rent facilitation solution. It is a payments, like as you mentioned, it's a payment solution for rent payers and for landlords. And we effectively bridge between the two, so we can pay the landlord early and receive from the tenants over 12 payments. We embed that solution so that any time in your tenancy, you can choose to pay it in 12 and manage your cash flows, etc. Of course, it requires a good balance sheet, and the good news is on that front.
Amazing, really. I mean, what a
Thank
concept.
You.
Love it. Back to the floods, we've got two stories about the floods. Obviously, it was incredible how quickly the authorities moved to clear out the main highways and communities. But we saw, you know, Mudun is still suffering. A lot of communities are still suffering. Sharjah was very, very badly affected. The water, all of the water has been contaminated as well. So Sharjah is now providing flood relief support through WhatsApp for families affected. So you can now get in touch directly. And Sharjah will help basically bring deliveries and supplies directly to people's doorsteps. This is through the Sharjah Emergency Crisis and Disaster Management team. They've partnered up with the Sharjah Social Services Department to create this direct line basically for requesting urgent food and medicine. Families stuck at home due to floodwaters, still, some of them are still now stuck at home, but they can now bypass potential dangers and receive assistance quickly by sending details to this WhatsApp number, 06-501-5161. And authorities will take immediate action. So that's great. But my question to you is, real estate, tell us about what landlords are doing after the flooding.
Well, I mean, it depends. The vast majority escaped any major damage, of course, to the properties. And most condos, apartments, etc., the damage might have been mostly in the common areas. And response has been overall very, very good on that front. But there are certainly communities that have suffered flooding. These, on the vast majority of them, are villa and townhouse communities.
Just when villas were on the rise after Corona, now
absolutely. But it sort of highlights also. Probably people will start looking at positioning of certain villas. There's certain communities where the raised properties nothing happened, but effectively all the rain that landed there got flushed down. Through the lower lying properties, and these were the ones that were the most damaged. I think you will eventually start seeing it in the market that these might start getting priced differently. By consumers, by renters, by buyers, and so on. Just as other things came to the light in terms of build, finish, and quality of certain developments and developers versus versus others, as well as the nature of the response of the community managers and the building managers.
Absolutely.
So some sort of responded and prepared well before, while others were more lethargic in their and reactive in their response, and these things will start to take people will start to take note of these different experiences.
So Ahmad came forward and said it's going to you know, pay for damages by the floods at no cost to residents. Some people in the comments were divisive. Some said, yes, Imar did come to my house, they are helping, this is amazing, etc. Some said, we're only fixing it in cases of emergencies, etc.
It's a big event, and I think there needs to be a degree also of management of expectations on how much you can cover over a period of, of time and the resources you have to do so.
Is it on the developers to do that, or is it
I think
on the
a lot
landlords?
Of it is on, yeah, it's no, definitely on the developers. A lot of, I mean, if the damage is specific,
and,
you know, you have a window that is leaking or you have a roof that is not working well, that's on the landlord. But the vast majority of the problems that we saw were within the community and the common areas of the community and, and related to the infrastructure and so on, while others were related to the quality of the product itself. Right, where you expect it, you know, to the fit and finish to have sustained, you know, some this sort of weather event, and then it didn't. So a lot of it does lie with the developer, but also it's one of those hard things to plan for entirely 100% well, but yet within that set of expectations, some did much better than others for sure.
Realistically, though, and legally, let's say, will the developers actually be held accountable? Will they take responsibility? You know, Imar has come forward. Khalaf al-Habtoud has come forward, not for the properties, but just to help Emirati families. He's donated a lot of money for that.
I think a lot of people have stepped forward, actually, and offered help and delivered on help with people who are stricken by this. Is there a legal path for damages? Definitely, in a lot of cases, when you can establish liability. But I think the concern of developers more is reputational. Right, so I think their focus will always be on the reputational element for for the developers, and their responsiveness is what will set that reputation. It's what's already been delivered and done, of course, is part of it, and it's hard to take that back. But also how responsive you are today, and when you identified that there is a deficiency in some sort of infrastructure in the development, how you respond to that, and I think that is how you establish going forward. You know, the reputational element and how you've responded to something of this magnitude.
Yeah, very interesting. Like the entire infrastructure, obviously, it was the highest rainfall that the UAE has seen in what, 75 years. But what just from the real estate industry, is there any kind of, you know, back room, not gossip, but any just, you know, feedback about are we in trouble when it comes to the infrastructure? Were some people surprised by specific developments that really let people down, that, you know, people paid a lot of money for? What is the kind of the behind closed doors conversations?
On both ends. On the, you know, praise for some of the responsiveness in certain areas, and also criticism in others for, you know, the responsiveness of some other private developers, right? So it did range, and some stood out. Right. In general, I won't go into too many of
For example,
details, but whoever's a master developer of a stricken community that was not responded to within a reasonable amount of time, of course, got some of that.
I can think of some. But
beyond that, I think now the thinking has already moved to this may not end up being an isolated event. There are weather changes out there, and it may mean that we will see this a little bit more often. And I think the overall government response has been not just reactive, but also from a planning and infrastructure point of view, is dealing with it as something that may happen more often.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I live in DIP, in the Ingreen community, and when it used to rain before, just a couple of, you know, whatever, just a little bit of rain, I mean, the entire compound would be flooded, water coming into the house, etc. Recently, because that happened, they figured out a way to keep the water To a minimal in the compound itself. And especially for this time, like, yes, we had flooding outside on the roads in the community, but nothing actually inside the houses.
It's localized design and of a drainage system that actually handles the flow of water in these in these cases.
Because we were expecting the absolute worst for us, and then
so
it was,
good work on the localized infrastructure has been done.
I can't say the same for the where the Marriott courtyard used to be, though, because the everything there was
flooded,
totally totally destroyed.
Totally.
I mean, the water was up to where we're standing, like where I'm pointing to at right now, to the waist up, basically.
So the level of that development probably is significantly lower than
The problem is there is a lake there as well, so the lake overflows.
Yeah, and it's and I think that's exactly what happened, you know. It it carried all that extra water and then overflowed into into the hotel section.
So yeah, and there were a lot of restaurants and shops there that were flooded as well. So that was very sad to see. But on the upside, and also speaking of the floods, the UAE is offering loan relief for flood victims. So it's helping those. Basically, the central bank has issued a directive allowing banks and financing companies to offer a six-month postponement on personal and car loan repayments for those struggling. Reminds me of COVID times when the landlords
That's exactly what I thought of.
And
even a faster response, actually, in this case, and certainly commendable. People have suffered damage, and they in terms of their dwellings, in terms of their cars, and so on. So you know, there is some distress out there, and this actually comes in at will certainly be helpful for a lot of families.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm just going to read out a bit more information for people out there. The measure basically aims to ease financial burden by temporarily suspending payments without incurring additional fees, interest, or an increase in the loan principal. That's good to hear. While the focus is on loan relief, property owners can breathe a sigh of relief as well, because the central bank confirmed that comprehensive insurance policies covering loss and damage, often called comprehensive insurance, will cover damage caused by the heavy rains. Insurance companies that issued these policies are responsible for compensating affected homeowners and car owners. The situation extends to homes as well. Property owners with comprehensive insurance on their residences can claim repairs or any damage caused by the recent rains. The central bank urges residents to carefully review their insurance documents. We had a lawyer on the show to talk about this, to understand their coverage, and they advise to contact a unit called Senedac.
Senedac.
It's funny when you read words in English, it's Senedac. Okay.
And then you associate the Arabic word to it.
Exactly. Yeah. So contact Senedac.
Your support.
Your support. Yeah, it's a beautiful word. Mm. We often say your father or your brother is Senedac.
Like,
they have your back, basically.
Pretty much.
So you can contact them for any disputes with the insurance companies, which I'm guessing we will see.
We will probably see a few of, but in general, this is what you need insurance for, right? This is why we recommend insurance. It's not day to day. It's for events like these, so that you're covered for, you know, stuff that you cannot predict.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. And the next story we have is Saudi Arabia's booming cinema. Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
I mean, pent-up demand. I wouldn't be surprised at all, actually. Yeah. And plus a relatively young average age in in the kingdom means probably that demand for entertainment is high. Yeah. And it's been pent up.
Yeah, absolutely. So in just 6 years after opening its first cinemas, the kingdom's film industry has brought in a staggering almost $1 billion dollars, so 986 million. Moviegoers have snapped up over 61 million tickets since 2018, flocking to see a diverse range of movies. Great news for Saudi Arabia. I'm not going to go into this too much, though, but basically the growth obviously is reflecting the cultural shift in Saudi. It's aligning with, you know, MBS's Vision 2030, economic diversification, improved quality of life, improved real estate, hopefully, as well, because the real estate game is not that strong.
Well, expect a lot in Saudi of growth there, absolutely, but it comes in stages.
Yeah, absolutely. The entertainment sector, however, is poised to become a major player, with projections estimating a $23 billion contribution to GDP and over 100,000 new jobs by 2030. Those are great, great numbers. And the concerts...
And remember, this might have been spending that the Saudi public was already doing, but outside of Saudi Arabia.
Right.
So it is the
not good news for us here in Dubai and the UAE.
No, because Dubai and others were actually the conduits of a lot of that spending that today actually rightfully can be benefited from domestically in Saudi Arabia. You build for it, and you build the infrastructure, and you make it available in all the sort of population centers in Saudi Arabia, and this is the result, and that's only the beginning, and it seeps through. You know, you talk about the movie theaters now doing very well, but what that's also going to end up helping is the domestic production sector. You know, the entertainment sector domestically within Saudi Arabia. You're going to see more and more domestically produced entertainment coming out of there, because the ceiling has lifted right on what can be done and what should be done.
Definitely, so much potential. Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. I think every time you've been on the show,
we managed to mention him.
Yeah, exactly. So besides the profits, we'll talk about the profits. But I want to talk about something else before, because he's criticized an Australian order to remove the stabbing video that we saw online. So the Australian authorities wanted him to remove that video showing the stabbing of the religious leader that we saw in a church. And he doesn't want to do it.
And it's in line with his position on censorship of content. I think it's not surprising. Mm-hmm. And I think he's held that position on a number of issues prior. Where I stand on it personally, I'm not a big fan of
watching people getting stabbed.
Yes, snuff videos. But again, I believe it can be something that is a choice on the on the other end. So you know,
I think he's been fair. He said instead of deleting it, he's hiding it from Australian users. So it could be accessed via other ways, but I think when it comes to this, he has been fair. Anyways, just thought it was I just love his, I love that he embraces his views even if I don't agree with them. He's very, you know, just doesn't give a flying.
Yep, it's his opinion, and he will share it. But he's kind of consistent.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, Tesla profits have dropped 55%. But I'm going to let you continue on that, because he remained optimistic.
So they missed on all fronts in the first quarter earnings report that just came out yesterday after market close. Some of it was expected. You know, there was an expectation of a decline in deliveries and in revenues and in profitability and so on. But what actually happened was even worse. A lot of it, according to them, was supply bottlenecks, the issue with the Red Sea deliveries, and so on, some recalls related to the Cybertruck. But the crazy thing was that wasn't the story, right? The story was much more about the future in the case of Tesla, which has not been having a great time. The stock is down maybe like slashed by half from its highs, even more than that. And the EV space in general has been under a lot of pressure. But the stock after the announcement, after market, jumped up 20%, even though they missed on all these fronts. And it was really because of his delivery, of his statement on the future of the company, which is around the autonomous vehicle.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a doubling down over there. It's something that you mentioned over there. If you're going to value us as a as an auto company, sell the stock, right? Don't be part of part of this. And that is because the real story they see is that they're going to crack autonomy.
Yeah.
Autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles. A lot of people have failed in cracking that nut. It's proven to be a much more difficult deliverable, but it seems like Tesla and Musk are doubling down on it.
Yeah.
The product they're building is the robo-taxi. If you recall, Uber had pumped a lot of money and then just shut off that whole experiment. Prior to that, Google, of course, has been working on a lot of private companies, and private money went into it.
But yeah.
If you ask me, I probably, and if I was a betting man, I would bet that Tesla is the best positioned today to mm-hmm. crack that nut, and actually has access to the funding and profitability and scale and experience and data and so on to make it a reality. And I think the verdict of the market was that, you know, they're bought into it.
Yeah, it's just really though fascinating how, you know, the stock went up because of him, really, and his vision. And we were talking about
and then maybe the statement that he's still in the driver's seat, right? Very much so in the case of Tesla.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people were concerned that he's kind of putting it on the back burner, and all his focus is on X, which I wish was still named Twitter. What a name, X. But anyways, we were talking about these kind of leaders and how much their personality really affects their businesses, like Kabir Mulchandani from the Five. He was arrested, a couple of years ago, spent some time in jail, made a big comeback, and is now doing very well with the Five hotels. They just opened a new one in JBR. But it's his personality, really, that,
I think there's a lot of cases where the personality of the founder or the leader of the business is bigger than the business, right?
It's exactly.
I think you're talking about such cases.
Yeah.
Very entertaining, very great for news, right? Always
very
stuff
much.
Going on.
And
in a lot of times, you know, it is the difference between success and failure of the company. It's the personality of that founder that just pushes it beyond what you thought was physically possible.
Yeah, literally. And just, God, I mean, he loves being in the news. He loves that the Five has this infamous reputation because he's just sitting back and making just loads of money, basically.
You can hide from it or you can own it, right?
So exactly.
I think that's a case of owning it.
Crazy. Love it. Last but not least, an Emirati entrepreneur has secured investment for her company on Shark Tank Dubai. It's just a nice little community story because... Yeah, we always trash Shark Tank Dubai because we see the potential in it that it can do so much better. Have you watched the show?
I've watched a few episodes. I know a couple of people that that actually went on the show talking about their businesses.
Yeah.
I think there's something there, certainly. I think a lot of the conversations that happen are very legitimate about the prospects of the business. I think some of the investments made are in some excellent businesses over there. But I understand also that it did not distribute maybe the same way that it could have had it been, you know, a little bit more new age, new media friendly. I actually have to admit, I've followed. Downloaded a few episodes and followed them and have an interest to see what's out there actually domestically in terms of ideas and what people are doing and what the panel thinks of it.
I've been watching it on YouTube. It wasn't available on YouTube, but it is now. And I actually ended up buying products from this woman who got some investment on the show. And now I'm just following her and following her brand. And it's lovely. It's fascinating to see.
Actually the case that a lot of the companies that come on the show, the benefit isn't really the investment.
Yeah, sure.
The benefit is the coverage, right?
Sure,
is more people are now aware of their product if they manage to sell the product well.
Yeah.
There was a fruit... what do you call them?
House of Pops?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I love House of Pops. And
you know,
we were aware of it
yeah. before, but you know, ever since the episode where the investment happened, I think my consumption of that product went up, or the family consumption of that product went up.
Oh, lovely.
Just became top of mind, I guess.
That's nice. Okay, I'm glad that they're working on the distribution, because it was a massive problem. But anyways, Qadri Al Awadi is the Emirati entrepreneur, and her company is Bumblebee Foods, very cute. So it's in the competitive baby food market, nutritious frozen meal plans for infants and toddlers. Who would have thought? So she was seeking $16,000 in exchange for a 10% stake in her company, valued at $400,000. The math is a bit weird on there.
That doesn't add up, but
as it usually is on Shark Tank. That's always one of the issues on all the Shark Tank shows. But anyways, yeah. So it's good to see. It's nice to see the sharks. Obviously, Amira Sajwani, Faisal, Noor Suwaid, and we've got Ali Khoury, and we've got one more brilliant guy. But
I think so.
But anyways,
from Beko
it was Beko, exactly. Amira, Faisal, and Noor, all three sharks offered partnership deals to her. So that's lovely. Bumblebee Food is a female-owned startup. I kind of hate it when people say that. It's just weird, right? Because it's like, I don't know.
It's a startup.
It's good, but it's also weird. Anyway, so it offers...
So you fall on that sort of side of the conversation.
I mean, I love, you know, for example, I
You don't
I would
believe
say,
it
makes a difference.
Yeah, or it helps in putting that message in there.
I feel like... It already helped that she is a she, and we can see
we
that.
Can see,
so
yeah,
we don't
yeah.
really have to say
female owned it
because it is her. We already see that, you know. But
when
it comes to statistics of, you know, female founded, et cetera, yeah, we need to know, because we need to know if there's improvement, if you know what I mean. So when it comes to that, yeah, or I don't know, even having an all-female panel or something, or all-female, it's just weird because a lot of panels are all-male panels, but we don't really have to say that. We don't.
I think it's an attempt to pull some weight in the other direction.
I don't feel too strongly about it. You know, I don't get offended or anything. Sometimes it just sounds weird.
I think I'm personally for making a concerted effort to support female entrepreneurs, right? Because they are female. And that's not a differentiating factor, but that's a recognition that the way the system is built might be disadvantageous to them, right? Mm-hmm. So because if all the decision makers are male, then that just puts you immediately at a
great point, at
a disadvantage. Yeah.
When you put it that way,
but how you go
great.
About it, I think, is very nuanced.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I'm actually a fan of some of the sort of the institutions or entities that came up by female entrepreneurs to support other female entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
I think that is particularly interesting and beneficial, especially ones that have succeeded and have lessons to share on how, you know, they managed in this environment.
I love that. It's funny. Last thing before we end the show, there's a PR company called Tish Tash here. And I remember when they first came out, they put out an article in The National about how it's an all-female, all-women company, and they don't want... They had one guy work with them, and there were so many quotes from women that it just didn't feel right. He just didn't fit in. It was,
oh, they fired him.
They fired him, yeah. So that was brilliant, but I mean, not so much, but really some things come out and they're just so ridiculous that they're so funny. But, you know, they're giving jobs to women instead of men because they feel like there is a need for that. So,
all power to them.
All power to them. Anyways, excuse me, guys, for all the sniffling. Apparently starting to get a flu. But thank you, Waleed, for your time.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure.
We'll see you next Wednesday.
I look forward to it.
Don't go off flying anywhere
else. No, I'm here. I'm stuck for now.
Okay, please, because then I'm just going to be more jealous and I'm going to lose my mind. So stream us If you're listening to this, yeah, get us wherever you get your podcasts or stream us on smashing.tv. You know the drill, and we'll see you tomorrow.